2, starting in verse 1. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My time has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to his servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He didn't realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." This, the first of his miraculous signs Jesus performed at Cana in Galilee, he thus revealed his glory and his disciples put their faith in him. It really has been special for me to have so much leeway in the different passages that we get to choose to study each week. And John is full of really interesting, unique stories. And in fact, if you were to set John, the Gospel of John, alongside Matthew, Mark, and Luke, what we oftentimes call the Synoptic Gospels, because they're so much the same, if you set them together, John's his total content is 90% of it is not found anywhere else. And the miraculous water to wine taking place is found only in John. And so there's a lot of different places that I could have landed on this morning as we look at John. We could have talked about John chapter 3 and Nicodemus. We could have talked about John chapter 4 with the woman at the well. We could have gone to John chapter 11 in the raising of Lazarus, or John 13 when he washes his disciples' feet. Over and over, John 21 when Jesus has the miraculous catch of fish. There's so many just fascinating and interesting and rich stories throughout John. And yet here we are in John chapter 2 talking about what is quite possibly one of the most awkward passages in John, especially for us today, because it uses the word wine. And what do we make of this? What's really going on? And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about it, but I also believe that if the Bible is going to talk about it, then I think we should address it. And if it doesn't talk about it, then we don't need to fabricate a reason why we need to talk about it. But let's just address the elephant in the room and talk about this for just a minute. Jesus, not only does he not seem to condemn the consumption of wine, he seems to condone it. He actually is the one who turns water into wine. And we can go in and we can speculate, well, what does this really mean? Well, maybe the Greek means something else. Maybe it doesn't mean wine. Maybe it means like odules. You know, like this is non-alcoholic version, because of course consumption of alcohol is bad. What's really going on with this story? And we make a big deal out of something that's really quite small. The Greek word is oinos. It is referring to wine. If you look throughout the Bible, there are places where clearly wine is acceptable. In fact, you can look back in the Old Testament, and there are places where it says, you know, we drink wine and be merry and give thanks to God. And there are other times where we read and says, you know, wine is a mocker and a beer is a brawler. So what really is going on with this passage? And in the last 60 seconds, I just want to say, I wish it were as black and white as it could be, but it's not. You see, I don't think alcohol is really the issue. It's certainly not the main point of this story, but alcohol is not the real problem. It's what alcohol means in your life. That's where the problem comes in. Okay, we can be grown adults and we can be logical about this. Paul tells Timothy, hey, you need to drink a little wine. It's good for you. Paul is not saying hit up the bars and stay out all night long. Alcohol's not the problem. Just like money is not the problem. Last week we talked about the wee little man. What was his name? Zacchaeus. Did Zacchaeus have money? Yeah, he had lots of it. It says he was wealthy. Was there a problem? Did Jesus say there was a problem with that? It wasn't the money that was the issue. It's what the money meant to other people. There's this great contrast. We didn't really talk about it. I want to highlight it this week real quickly. The story before in Luke chapter 18 was the rich man. He had lots of money. He goes to Jesus and says, what do I need to do to be saved? Ultimately, Jesus realizes that the man is coveting. He has made an idol out of his money. And he says, go and get rid of your money. Sell it, give it to the poor, and come follow me. What did the man do? He walked away sad. He held his head down. He had gone to him, to Jesus, as a teacher and said, teacher, what must I do? And then we have Zacchaeus. He also has a lot of money. And he sees Jesus and Jesus says, come and follow me. And because Zacchaeus loved Jesus more than money, he hopped down from the tree and he joyfully followed him. And he called him Lord. He called him master. The difference was not the amount of money that they had. It was what did the money really mean to them. The man who loved money walked away sad. And the man who loved Jesus joyfully hopped down from the tree. We're not here to tell you or try to draw a line and say this is the blood alcohol content that's acceptable. What we are saying is, if it gets in the way with your relationship with Jesus, and if it affects other people, just don't do it. And Paul's very clear about this throughout his writings. All things are beneficial, but not all things are permissible. Their issue was drinking wine back then, but it was also eating food that had been sacrificed. And so I don't think I've really cleared up any of the waters. I think I've muddied them. But if you come in and say, here, I want to show book, chapter, verse of here's what the Bible says about alcohol, and you're supposed to be a teetotaler over here, or you can go out and have parties over there, I think you've missed the point altogether. Is it an idol in your life? Okay, so I've said that, but I want you to know one more time, in case you missed out, this is not the point of John chapter 2. Not the point at all. Jesus is not here to talk about whether or not you should abstain from drinking alcohol. But let's listen to this story. It's on the third day. Jesus is in Cana at Galilee. There's a wedding there. Weddings there happen all the time. We were just at a wedding last week. They're beautiful and great. And according to today's standards, this would be an extremely long wedding. They didn't do weddings counting in hours. They did it in days. The wedding would take an entire day. And then there would be a celebration that might last 3, 4, 5, 6 days. Several days in, they ran out of wine. Now, for us, that didn't mean a whole lot. Like, oh, bummer, you know, party foul, something's not right. For them, it was a huge deal. It was a huge, huge deal. This wasn't just embarrassing. They could actually have a lawsuit against them for not having enough food and drink at the wedding party. This would have brought great shame upon the family. Who's the family? We don't know. Why? Because it wasn't important. We don't know who the bride or the groom is. Some say, well, it might have been Nathaniel because he was invited there. We don't know. Some say, well, maybe it probably was somebody related to Jesus or at least to Mary. Of course, that would have been to Jesus too, because it seems like Mary is not just an attendee at the wedding. It seems as though she wasn't just a guest, that she had some role in the goings-on of the wedding. And the reason why is, if she's a guest, why is she going around trying to figure out who has enough to eat or drink? So quite possibly Mary is one of the ones who's in charge of this. They have ran out of wine, and this is a big deal. This is beyond embarrassing. They were all in big trouble. And so Mary goes to Jesus. And she says, they have no more wine. And so we immediately understand by the response of Jesus that she is expecting that Jesus is going to do something that no one else can do. Because he's going to say, you know, why are you bothering me with this? Why are you concerning me with this? My time has not yet come. He knows that when she comes to him, that she is expecting him to do something so great that it will now inaugurate the ministry of Jesus. Now, we can spend a lot of time talking about, well, was Mary bossing them around? What kind of control did she have? But I want us to see it in this light. Jesus had concern for the family. He wanted to show honor to his mother. And he believed in the sanctity of marriage. And he understood that this was going to be more than just a blip on the radar if they ran out of wine. So Jesus makes that response and then turns to the deacons. That's the Greek word. Okay? Turns to the deacons, the servants, and says, do whatever he tells you. Folks, that'll preach. Can we just stop right there? Whatever Jesus says to do, you do it. Mary has full faith that whatever needs to be done, Jesus will do it, and he will do it in the right way with the right motivations. And this is where it gets really rich and really beautiful. So he looks over there, and what is sitting over there on the side? These jars. Okay, so let's forget the jars, you know, that you might have had as a kid, those big glass ones, you know, that had the hook and you throw them over. We're not talking about 1 gallon jars. We're not talking about 5 gallon buckets. Okay, we're talking about jars that would hold between 20 and 30 gallons. This was not like, hey, let's go grab a jar and we'll go scoop water out and carry it back. Each one contained between 20 and 30 gallons. A gallon of water is about 8 pounds. So that full, not including the jar itself, it would have weighed somewhere around 200 pounds. Okay, this was not something that they had to go and get it and scoop it out and go and pour it out. Scoop it and pour it out. And I love this. I don't know if the servants were trying to be faithful or maybe they were trying to mock Jesus, like this is a big waste of our time. But how do they fill it? Halfway? Three quarters? To the brim. To the very top. It gets filled up. And Jesus is going to give them instructions. He said, I want you to draw the water out and I want you to take it to the master and make sure it gets his approval. And if I'm one of those guys, I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Is this a joke? Like, do you want me to get fired? I could get beaten for this type of thing. But I want to pause for just a second and talk about what's really going on with this story. These jars, John makes sure to emphasize their purpose. What are they used for? Ceremonial cleansing. This was a big deal. In fact, Jesus and his disciples, they got into a little bit of trouble for this because Pharisees would say, hey, how come you're not washing your hands like this? You need to make sure you're following all the laws that the Jews have. They would go and they would wash their hands in this. And this was more of a ceremonial cleansing more than was a physical cleansing. Like they didn't have the soap nearby. This is for ceremonial purposes. That's what these were used for. And apparently they had been used up because as we can guess, those were empty. There wasn't enough in there. Jesus had them fill it all the way up. Here's the big, big takeaway from John chapter 2. Jesus was beginning his ministry. And what he had to show the Jews was this. The law is not enough. The jars were there. They had been used. They had been left half or completely empty. And guess what? It didn't fix their problems. There still was something going on. They were in there and they were at the feast and the wine was out and things were about to get really bad. And it didn't matter that they had the ceremonial jars. That hadn't cut it. It wasn't enough. There was still something missing. And Jesus says, I'm going to take the law, which can't do it, and I'm going to fill it up and we're going to start all over again. And let me show you, this is what the heart of the gospel is really all about. Because you can wash your hands and they'll still get dirty again. You can follow the law and you're still going to make mistakes. You can offer sacrifices, but there will not be enough blood from all the lambs that you slaughter to completely cover your sins. But Jesus, this is not about drinking wine. You know what this is really about? This is Jesus in huge marquee letters saying, I am the wine. In fact, later on in John's gospel, he's going to talk specifically about this. I am the wine. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you'll have no part of me. What did the wine do for that wedding? It completely saved it. The washings didn't do it. Not only did it save the wedding, guess what it did for the people who were there? It brought joy in their lives. Jesus was starting His ministry and He said, you've been washing your hands with this and you've been miserable and it's never really cut it. But I am the one who will fill up the jars and you will have joy. Doesn't John say something about this later on? Jesus says, I've come to give you life. And give you life to what? The fullest. Not just, I'm here to make you busy. I'm here to bring you joy. Jesus was beginning His ministry by saying, not only am I the Son of God, but I have come to break you out of your chains and out of your slavery and out of the law that you tried to keep but you continue to fail. And I'm here to be the one that is the sacrifice, the wine, the blood, and I will give you joy. Think about how Jesus began His ministry. He turned water into wine. Let's go backwards a few thousand years, and we have another man who began his ministry of sorts. His name was Moses. Moses goes to Egypt, called by God out of the desert to go and to free His people. Remember what Moses says to Pharaoh? You better know this by now. Thank you. At least somebody knows it. The Hebrew goes just like this. Let my people go. Right? He comes up and he says that. And how does he begin that whole process of leading the people? What's the first miracle that he does? He turns water to blood. Jesus is going to begin His ministry of calling people out of the desert, and instead of turning it from water to blood, He's going to turn from water to wine. And He says, I am here to save you and to free you. Just trust in me. Believe in me. I think what's really special about this miracle is that until it got spread later on by word of mouth, there weren't a whole lot of people who would have known about it. In fact, John goes to great lengths to let the reader know that even as the master of the ceremony, as he was testing out the water that was actually wine, he didn't even know where it came from. Jesus didn't do this miracle to wow people. It wasn't even a miracle that was just about, well, somebody's in trouble, I better come in and save the day. John shows that this was a sign that Jesus was coming and He was going to bring joy to our lives if we would follow Him. That's kind of hard to do though these days, isn't it? I mean, it almost seems like those can't go hand in hand. In fact, the world, it will tell you that they can't. That you can either follow Jesus or you can be happy. You can follow Jesus or you can... If you follow Jesus, you will not be happy. You're going to be sad and you're going to be miserable. And if you don't believe me, go to FERS after a Sunday morning and look at all the sad people walk in who seem to grumble and complain all the time. That's what the world says that we are. That if you're going to follow Jesus, you're going to be sad and bitter and angry and belligerent. Okay, or you can be, forget Jesus, let's just be happy, let's have a good time, woo, we can do whatever we want. And Jesus says, you want to know what? I have come to give you life and life to the fullest. Jesus offers that to us. Are we willing to take it? Can we be a people who have joy in our life because of Jesus? It's what He's called us to. It is a marker of who we are. If you see somebody who has joy in their life, then your response should be, they must know Jesus. Do we have Jesus in our life? We have joy. Because no matter what happens, God is still with us. And His Son, He is enough. This morning, we're going to close out in song in just a few moments, and you're going to have a decision to make. You can get up and you can walk out and say, I punched my card, I was here. And you can grumble all the way out. And you can turn on Fox News and you can sit there and you can grumble some more about what's going on in this world. And you get up this afternoon and you go out to eat and you can grumble some more around your waitress, or you can go to Walmart. There are plenty of reasons why we can grumble in Walmart, aren't there? Just go there to buy a pack of gum. And two shopping carts later, you're 45 people behind in line waiting to get out of that place. Or we can be people of joy. Jesus began His ministry and says, I've come to offer you something so much greater. My prayer is that you will accept that. You'll say, you know what? God has given me something so great. I can't help but have joy in my life and show kindness and love to this world and choose to honor Him in everything that I do. And so right now we're going to stand and sing a song of encouragement. And my prayer is that you lift up to the Lord just pure joy for how He has changed your life. If you have not allowed your life to be changed, if you have still stuck there with the ceremonial wash basin and you're grumbling and struggling, my prayer is that you'll come forward. Let us pray for you. Let us encourage you. And let us honor God. And let's do it as we stand and sing.